This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
We ought to be learning chapter 9 and chapter 10 and 11 tonight, but it's actually difficult to understand them without 12, 13 and 14, so I'm going to skip ahead and do that, which means that those of you who are working from photostats probably won't have a photostat in front of you, so I'm going to just read and translate it and explain it as we go. It was interesting that Malcolm Rabson told me that his Nefesh HaChaim was on his table when Rav Ezrachi, the Rosh Yeshiva who's visiting out here from Yerushalayim, came to visit him and asked him about it. So Malcolm explained that he was learning it, and Rav Ezrachi's comment was, "This is the Shulchan Aruch of life. One can't live without this. How can you live if you don't know this?" And yet it's so interesting, but it's not taught. It's not taught. It's not learned. It's so interesting how it's not really the core and the essential material that necessarily becomes popular. If you look at what people are learning and the shiurim, some of the things are that a sefer like this is unfortunately so neglected, and it's so core to basic understandings. Let's get into chapter 12, Perek Yud Bet. Uma shehanefesh ruach neshama shel ha'adam ein biyecholton lekasher ha'olamos ad ridasom lemato beguf ha'adam. He deals with an interesting question, and that is, in chapters 9 and 10 and 11, he explains the differences between angels and human beings, and he explores whether... Sorry, I didn't welcome Rabbi K. Thank you. Nice to have you here. I forgot to make mention of you. As many of you know, Rabbi K is doing some amazing work with Arachim in presenting the Torah to people who've had no exposure to it previously in a way that just opens it as a source of enormous wisdom and has been the cause of many people continuing to study and to learn. He deals with the difference between angels and human beings and which is greater, and he says angels are greater than human beings. The Zohar says so several times. There's a Gemara, he quotes various sources that make it quite clear, angels are greater than human beings. However, angels can't impact, he says. So in one way, well in some ways, and the one way particularly that is of concern to us in these discussions, we're greater than angels. And that is, angels can only impact on the level at which they are. Angels can't, they're not connected vertically. The important thing about the ideas that he's developing is our vertical connection. That we have a line that goes up through all the different worlds. It's like a spiral system that goes up all the way to Hashem's throne. And each one of our souls connects all the way up. And it's like a spine. It's like a nervous system, if you can try and imagine it. Like you've got a spinal column with nerves going out at every level. And you've got a brain. And he makes the comparison to the body often. So our brain, because the brain is connected through the nervous system to every part of our body, a thought can impact every part of our body. We can direct the body, we can control the body, we can influence the body through the brain because of the spine, the spinal column that has the nerves that go out from it to every part of the body. So it is, if you can picture the human soul, each one of us has a kind of a spine. Our soul has a spine, and we have a nervous system that goes out at each level all the way up to the brain, which sits all the way at the top. And because of that, we're connected universally. The human being is the only being that has universal connection. We are connected to every single part of the entire universe, everything that God created. And he developed that in some of the earlier chapters. Some of you will remember where he talks about the fact that God brought together all the forces and all the energies and material, everything that there is in the universe. There's a portion of that, there are little atoms of that in each one of us. We're all made up. Each one of us is made up of elements of the entire universe, so that every one of our actions, our thoughts and our deeds, every one of our actions, our thoughts and our words has some level of impact universally. In every universe that is, that angels don't do. Angels don't have vertical spines. So they can only impact, they're like one of the vertebrae. They just operate at one level. Some are higher, some are lower. They're all higher than us, that's why they're greater than us. They all operate primarily at higher levels than we operate primarily, which is down here. But they can't impact vertically. They can only impact on their level. Whereas we can impact the entire universe. However, in order for us to impact the entire universe, we have to be connected to the physical world. So we're made up, our souls are made up at the most simple level of nefesh, ruach, and neshama. We have a nefesh, which is the energy that drives our life force, that makes our bodies work, that makes our system work, our brains, everything, that the life force is the nefesh. Then there's ruach. Ruach is a higher level of spirituality. And then there's neshama, which goes all the way up to Hashem. And they're connected to each other. This nefesh, ruach, and neshama are the different dimensions of the human soul. But that nefesh, ruach, neshama, the human soul also cannot impact it. It works like an angel. So although the human soul is connected all the way up, it has no force if it's not connected down below. Ki lesaken olam ha'asiyo. Because in order to have any impact in the physical world, the physical world is called olam ha'asiyo. We make things in this world. We don't create in this world, we make. And make means we put things together, we cut and paste, and we innovate in that way by taking different things and putting them together in new ways, seeing different patterns. So this is called olam ha'asiyo. Ki lesaken olam ha'asiyo, to impact and improve the olam ha'asiyo, the physical world, hutzruchu behechrech lehislabesh beguf b'olam ha'maaseh. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama can only impact the physical world if it's housed in a body. So the body becomes the key to our impact. We can't impact without the body, because the body is our interface with the physical world, and our physical world is the kind of the control board of the whole universe. You look at a kind of a switchboard. So if you go into the cockpit of a plane and you see all the switches and the controls, each one does something to the plane, but the fact is it's all at the cockpit. This is the cockpit. The physical world is the cockpit, not Shemayim. Shemayim is the computer. Shemayim is where all the chips are. But the operating, the keyboard is this world. It's the physical world. So of course we all know the keyboard is the dumbest part of the computer. It has no brains. The brain is inside. But if there's no keyboard, what can you do with a computer? Absolutely nothing. That's how it is. The Olam HaSiyah, this world, is the dumbest part of the universe. But this is where you operate. You can't operate anywhere else in the universe. This is the keyboard. So to operate a keyboard, you need fingers. To have fingers, you need a body. To have a body, you need a brain. So the nefesh, ruach, neshama has to be housed in a body and has to interface with the world in order to have impact on the universe. Not just in the world. We can't impact the universe if we're not interfacing with the world. And there are various psukim that speak about this. Now, each of these next three chapters deals with a different area. So chapter 12 deals with action, chapter 13 deals with speech, and chapter 14 deals with thought, and how you impact the universe with deeds, with speech, and with thought. And he starts here with deeds. B'inyan ha-his-oirus shelamalo al-yedei b'chinas ha-maaseh. Let's start looking at the initiation of activity up and above through actions down below. That's what we're looking at. How do we impact the universe all the way up to God's throne through actions down in this world? So if you look at some verses, he takes some psukim, some verses. David HaMelech, Olav HaShom, says in Tehillim, Hayotzer yachad libom, we say this in the davening, who created in an integrated fashion their hearts, hamevin el kol ma'aseihim, who understands into all their deeds, says David HaMelech. Ulefi pshuto hayaroi loymar hamevin kol ma'aseihim. There's an unnecessary additional word in that sentence. It should say hamevin kol ma'aseihim, who understands all their deeds. What does al kol ma'aseh mean? You say this sentence often. You never really stop to look at it. Why? Hamevin kol ma'aseh. What's al kol ma'aseh? Omar El Komase, why does it say he understands into their deeds? Rotze Loemar Hanogea Lemaseim. He understands everything connected with their deeds. Behind it, that is Shuhua Yotzrom Yisbarach Shemo, that he, their creator, Hayodea Umevin, he knows and understands Ad Heichon Maaseim Magim V'Noigim B'Tikunei Ha'olamos Olehefech. He understands how far the impact is of all of the deeds. So Hamevin El Kol Maaseh, isn't that he understands what we do? That's easy. He understands the absolute ultimate impact of everything that we do. That's what it means. Hamevin El Kol Maaseh, he understands the direction, he understands the velocity of all of their deeds and what their ultimate impact is. But Chen Koheles Omar, and so Koheles also said, Ki eskol ma'aseh ha'elokim yovi ba'mishpot, all the deeds God brings to justice, I'll call ne'elom everything, even that is done in private and secret. V'lo amar ki ha'elokim yovi ba'mishpot eskol ma'aseh. It doesn't say God brings to justice all deeds. It says all deeds God brings to justice. V'hainu ki elokim. Let's understand the sentence, says the Reb Chaim Volozhiner. V'hainu ki elokim. The word Elohim, Perushor, means, remember we've had this now several times, Baal HaKoichos Kulo, the master of all energy. That's what Elohim means. Uve'es amoid ha'odom la'mishpat lefonav yisbarach shemo. And when man stands in justice before God, lo yodunu es hamaseh levado kefi shehi. God doesn't just judge our actions. It's not what he's looking at. What did he create, this whole elaborate world, for us to spend 70 or 80 or 90 or 100 years here doing little things, and then he judges us on the actions? You put on tefillin, you didn't put on tefillin, you did this, you did that. Who cares? Why is that important? That's not what he does. Ach yachshuvu gam kol ma shegoram v'sibev al yedei ma'aser. God looks at the impact of what you did. When you come upstairs and you realize what tefillin is, it's like, again, if we give the example of the guy sitting in the cockpit, and the pilot just makes a little adjustment, changes one little switch. Doesn't seem like anything terribly relevant. And then all of a sudden you pass and you see a huge thunderstorm on the left hand side, and you say, gee, good that you didn't fly into that. He says, yeah, that's what I just, that was that correction, so that we wouldn't fly into the thunderstorm. You don't judge the importance of the action by the size of the action. You judge the importance of the action by the impact of the action. That's why we have Malcolm, that links into the Gemara we were learning last night, into the Rosh that we were learning last night. That when you're looking in damages, it's exactly the same principle. When you look at human damages, one person damaging another, the damage is determined not by the size of the action. The damage is determined by the level of the impact. So sometimes a person can cause enormous damage with an expression on their face. Do you know so and so? Yeah. So? All he has to say. And he said, do you know what that did? It could be that somebody didn't do business with that person because of that. Could be that a shidduch didn't happen because of that. Who knows what that face can do? When you come up to Shamayim, Hashem doesn't say, oh, you pulled a face when the name was mentioned. That wasn't a nice thing to do. Hashem says, you destroyed a person's parnosa. You say, when? Don't remember. It didn't have anything to do with the person. And Hashem plays you that one little expression. That's it. Kol ma'aseim yoy. It's kol ma'aseh ha'lokim yovi ba'mishpah. All the actions God brings in terms of its ultimate impact. That's what he's interested in. You do a mitzvah, who knows what kind of impact that has? And again, now, and I've said to you over and over again in these shiurim, how interesting it is that so much of the New Age thinking that stems from the East and is based on research, not on Kabbalah. This is not, some of it is Kabbalah, but in their own system, but most of it is research. And they've now worked out the connections. They've now worked out, just by observation, they don't understand it yet, they don't know how it works, but they do know that there's a universal, that there's a global connection, that a person can do a little deed in one side of the world and it can impact enormously on another side of the world. That's now accepted, that one can do that, that one can have that kind of impact. Say they don't understand how, but they know it works. They've tested, they've examined, they've explored, they've researched. Here we see that everything that we do, there's nothing that the paradigm we have to get into with all of this is that was it Newton with every action has a reaction? Was that Newton? That's right. Newton studied the laws of mechanics and the laws of physics. What Newton didn't yet understand is that the laws of physics go up all the way through all the universes. So when there's a law of nature that applies in the Olam HaAsiyah, it applies everywhere in different forms, just as everything and every idea and every concept exists in this world and in all the other worlds all the way up. So a law of nature does. So if every action has a reaction, if that's a law of physics, it's also a law of spirituality. And we know, we understand, that every spiritual action has a spiritual reaction. But what they're finding out now, and we've known it all the time, of course, is not just that every physical action has a physical reaction, and every spiritual action has a spiritual reaction. Every spiritual action has a physical reaction, and every physical action has a spiritual reaction, because they're all connected. And what people are beginning to understand now, I just read an interesting article here on the weekend by an American consultant, a business consultant, who says 99.99% of the world is empty space. That's the figure he quotes. I know that it's something like that. I don't know if that's right, but he says 99.99%. We know that if you were to contract the world into matter, I think it would be the size of a golf ball. I used to think it was a cricket ball, but somebody told me that it was a golf ball is the size of if you really condensed it into the matter. So what's the rest? So everybody says the rest is space, it's empty space. Every atom has empty space, and every molecule has empty space, and much more empty space than anything else, hundreds of times more. But he says it's not the empty space, what's in between it is energy. So what really holds the world together is energy. We have this in Kabbalah all the time, but if the Rishonim were to turn off the energy of the world for a second, the world would collapse. If people would stop learning Torah, if there would be no Torah in the world for one moment, the world would collapse. What does that mean? That means that it's spiritual energy that has physical output, and that's what the world is beginning to grasp. That's the work that I do in business, trying to show business people how the biggest physical output is from spiritual input, not from physical input. Physical input has to be there. You've got to have all your stuff in place. You've got to have everything. The normal rules of business, just like the normal rules of mechanics, have to take place. The rules of nature are the rules of nature, but that's not where you stop. You've got to be able to take that far beyond that, and to understand how to convert a spiritual input to a physical output and a physical input into a spiritual output is what the Torah is all about. What is a mitzvah? A mitzvah is physical input, spiritual output. What is a thought? Spiritual input, physical output. That's how we do it. Everything is like that. You learn Torah, spiritual input. The result, physical output, keeps the world together, energizes a life, gives life force. So all the time we're about the conversion of spiritual into physical and physical into spiritual. Lots of people focus on the physical and lots of people focus on the spiritual. That's not the Torah. The Torah focuses on the interface. How does physical convert to spiritual? How does spiritual convert to physical? And when I said last time that we're not thinking Jewish, that's what I mean. We're not thinking Jewish, we're not living Jewish. We're doing Jewish things, but we're not living Jewish lives. We're not living as Jews. Because living as Jews means that we understand the laws of the universe from the Torah, and we live that way. That's what living Jewish means, but we don't. We do activities, and that's very good and wonderful that we do that. But we don't really believe the causality. We don't really believe the cause and effect that you can convert spiritual into physical and physical into spiritual, because we don't live that way. What do we do when we want energy? What's the natural thing? You're feeling unenergized. What do? You drink some coffee, or you take a rest, or you eat something, or you go to gym. And what else? If I was to say, take a flip chart and let's generate the things people do when they need energy. What about from people? Do they do anything different? They do the same things. Learn a piece of Gemara will give you much more energy. But we don't believe it. Although we sometimes see it. We try it sometimes and it sometimes works. But the world is so geared and programmed not to think that way. But we get sucked into the way that the secular world thinks. And we think secularly. That's the problem. We act Jewishly and we think secularly. And that causes us a lot of frustration. It causes us a lot of aggravation and frustration and lack of success. We don't have hatzlochi in either place. We're constantly torn. Do I go to a shir or do I go to work? Do I do this or do I do that? Constantly in tension. Because we see these two worlds in tension. They're not in tension. And that's why these Eastern guys are so calm. They understand that. No tension. They understand the interaction between the two. And they live that way. They have other problems, but they live that they understand, that they've always understood. In the West, we've divided the world up. There's spiritual and there's physical. There's religious and there's secular. There's Kurdish and there's Chol. It's true, there are these things. But there's an interface between them. There's a capacity to convert the one into the other and the other into the one. And that's what our Yiddishkeit is meant to be. So when Hashem judges our actions, He doesn't look at the action only, He looks at the outcome. That's what's important. B'chol ha-koychos v'ha-ilomos. And where does He look? He looks in all the energies and all the universes. So Hashem will say, that little thing that you did, look at its impact, millions of miles away in some universe. That's the impact that it had. That's what I'm judging you for good or for bad. Zehu she'omru ma'aseh ha'elokim. That's why it is at kol ma'aseh ha'elokim yovi b'mishpat. So the way he learns the posuk is not ki et kol ma'aseh ha'elokim yovi b'mishpat. It's not all deeds God will bring to justice. No, it's all deeds of Elohim, all deeds that impact and affect God. Anything that deals with the energies of the forces of the universes, God will judge. The Omar ki eskol ma'aseh velo alkol ma'aseh. And it says in the verse that God will judge all deeds. It doesn't say He will judge over all deeds. He will judge al ma'aseh. It says eskol ma'aseh. What does that mean? Ha'inyan kamo she'omar, he quotes it from a verse in Iyov, ki po'al odom yashalem loy. The verse is, God will repay people with their own activities. That's the payment. And that's as we've explained before. Let me pause there a moment. Have you read and heard in the New Age stuff that if you really can vision something that you want passionately and you really feel very strongly about it and you're very committed to it, you make an absolute commitment that this is the life you want, you have a picture of it, then things conspire to make it happen, provided there's a caveat which is not always talked about, but they say, make it very clear, provided that this thing that you're after is in for a higher purpose too. It's not just yourself. So if you have this vision that you want to retire on a yacht somewhere in the Greek Isles, that's a different story. But if you have a vision that has some benefit for the world, and the outcome of that might be that you retire on the yacht, but if the vision is one that has benefit for the world, and you can envision it and you're passionate about it, the universe conspires to make it happen, is a phrase that you hear over and over again. Nietzsche said it and other people said it. It's over and over again that the universe conspires to make it happen. If you're absolutely not, is there any root for that in the Torah? Is there any basis for that? So the Kutrub Chaim Veloshin says, Shemeisha oile al tohar machsheves ha'odom laasus mitzvah. The moment it comes into a person's mind in purity to do a mitzvah. So the mitzvah might be a small thing, or it might be a huge thing, like changing the world. Tekef na'aseh rishumo lamala b'shosho ha'elyon. That translates into a changed energy force at the highest root of his soul. So now just think about that for a moment. So I have a thought. I'm passionately committed to creating something, to doing something which is in the interests of the world as well as myself. It's something I'm passionate about, completely committed to. I'm going to make sacrifices for it. It's really important and it's to the benefit of others. We'll make the world a better place too. That's a mitzvah. At that time, in the highest point of my soul, which is right there up close to Hashem, you can see something there. If the soul doctors would do an analysis of the soul up there, they would find the impact, they would find the force, they would find the electrical force. Livnois vilintoa kama oilomos v'choychos elyonim. That starts building universes of energy. So look at what happens. I just vision something. I just say, I want to. I want to build the best yeshiva in the world, which is going to make great tzaddikim. And I'm really committed to it, and I'm willing to sacrifice everything I've got for it. This is absolutely it. It's my vision, it's my mission, it's my life. At that time that I really make that commitment, there's an impact at the very top of my soul, which sets into motion universes of energy, far bigger than me. As it says in Yeshayahu, "Va'osim devarai beficho," I will put my words in your mouth, lintoa shemayim, that will set up heavens. Uchemayim Ramzal, and as it says in Gemara Brochus, and we say it also often in the davening, Al tikri bonayich ela bonayich. Talks about the sons of God. It's not just sons, it's bonayich, the builders of God. With our thoughts we build. So there you have it. It's not just they're right. So what have they noticed? The New Age researchers have noticed that human beings have the capacity to create their futures. That's their whole thinking. You can create your own future. A lot of the motivational speakers now talk about this a lot. You can create your future. And it's right. Of course you can. Provided you're absolutely committed, you're willing to make enormous sacrifice for it. It's the most important thing in your life. You're passionate about it. And it's a good thing. Something right, it's something good, it's something that will benefit others apart from yourself. And if it's also l'shem shemayim, if one's doing it for good intent. You said last night that if you do something for the right reason, the right thing, for the right reason, with the right energy and attitude, you will have atzlocha, it will work. Why? The process is, the moment you start visioning it, the energy is already there. You don't have to do it. They say again, and I'm giving you the New Age stuff because it's a pity not to know. People are talking about this in the world, and we're being left behind, and it's ours. And so we need to know this stuff, because why should everybody else know it and we don't? What they talk about is the effort and the energy, when one's linked into this, when one understands this, should go into the clarity of the vision, not the work. You don't have to work so hard. You can leave it to God. This is the New Age goyim are talking like that, while we're busy working our heads off with Newtonian systems. Got to do this so that there'll be that. Pull this lever so that will be the outcome. If I don't work harder, there won't be outcome. So we're still in that old linear kind of thinking. That is saying you don't have to. If your vision is the right thing for the right reason, and it's the right attitude and energy, so put your effort into that. Spend time working on your vision. Create your future. And make sure it's l'shem shemayim, and for good reason and for good purpose. Then the rest, God does it. You don't have to do very much. You just have to keep on track. And we see that here too. That the forces, the energies that we create just with the thought, just with the commitment, already creates that force. Now what happens? U'mameila mis'oreru mamshich gam olov o makif me'akadusho ha'elyoino. Now, you want to do something worthwhile and worthy. So that's now got this kind of energy up there that shoots back down to you, and now you become enveloped with an energy, an or makif, an enveloping energy of upper kedusha, v'hu hamesayo legomro, and that energy helps you finish the job. So now we have a choice. We can do it with our own energy, and then we get exhausted and we have heart attacks and we have no time, no balanced life, and no time for our families because we're busy running so hard, because we're doing it all ourselves, trying to do it all ourselves. If we want to do it all ourselves, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, be my guest, go right ahead. You want to push the car yourself, you want to pull the train yourself, get out and try pulling, and you can pull as much as you want, and it will follow the normal rules of physics. If you want me to pull for you, that's also fine. Just link into the power source, just plug in. That's all. If you plug in, you can get that power, you can get that energy. And to plug in, there has to be the right thought, the right attitude, the right purpose, it must be the right thing. So that needs a lot of thought, that needs a lot of energy. Creating the vision, creating the picture, being sure that you're on the right track, that you're doing the right thing, that needs the effort, because then from that comes this O Makif Me'akadusha Elyona, one becomes surrounded by this, V'hu HaMesayo L'Gomra, and then one has amazing Siyata Dishmaya, things happen. V'achar Gomra HaMitzvah. And when you finish doing the mitzvah, hakadusha v'ha'or mistalek l'shorsho, that energy goes back to its source again. It doesn't stay with you forever. When you've done whatever it was that you'd have to do, I mean, I'm talking about major visions, but this is a day-to-day thing also. This is just about you need to go somewhere to do something worthwhile and good. You go with the right intention, and you envision the success. You envision that all the lights will be green. You envision that you'll find a parking right outside. You envision that when you come there, the person you need to see is there waiting for you, and you don't have to wait. You envision that you have a wonderful interaction with the person, and what you're proposing to the person he really likes and supports, and you're able to. You envision all that, and it's good. All that, always the caveat. Don't forget, it's always got to be the right thing for the right reason, and with the purity of thought and intent, and you envision all of that just on a day-to-day level. There's an Or Makif, an energy surrounds you that makes things go well. And when you finished, it goes. Finished, that's done. Now you have to start again. Bezehu inyan schar ha'olam haba. And if you understand that, you begin to understand the reward in the world to come. Shehu ma'aseh yedei ha'odam atzma. The world to come is your own creation. It's not nothing. It's not that there isn't a world to come waiting for you. You create your world to come. Shachar predas napshu mi'aguf. Because when the soul separates from the body, hu ha'ole lehisadein ulahaspia napshoi betzachtzichus ha'oros va'kufus va'olamos hakadoshim shenisfasfu benisrabu mi'maseh batovim. So what happens to that energy? It came down to help you. And so this whole energy here makes you successful, things go well, and you say to yourself sometimes, you've had days like that when everything lines up. And it's almost quite frightening. Sometimes everything lines up in a way that you feel like you're on a roll. And it's important to notice those times. Say, what am I doing right? There's something I'm doing right over here in my thoughts and my deeds. There's something I'm doing right. And then when it's done, that energy goes. Where's it gone? You say, yesterday was such a great day, everything was going fine. Today, well, today's a new day, you're not focused the way you were yesterday. But what happened to all that energy yesterday? That's your Olam Haba. That goes back and it waits for you. When your neshama leaves, it'll enjoy that energy and all the other positive things you've created. The energy you create by the good things you do in your life is your Olam Haba. That is the Olam Haba, nothing else. We like to think of this beautiful Garden of Eden that you go to, and it's waiting there, and there's a beautiful table set for you to come and have a good meal at, or whatever the images are. It's not. Your Olam Haba is your own creation. The energies you've created, positive and negative, they're all there, waiting. And when the body disappears, we're able to tune into them, and that's our Olam Haba. V'zer Shomer, and that's what it says in Pirkei Avos, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lohem Chelek. What's the next word? Every Jew has a portion of? Doesn't say that. No. It doesn't say a portion of Olam Haba, it says a portion le'olam haba, to the world to come. What does that mean? A portion to the world to come? V'lo yamru be'olam haba. It doesn't say a portion in the world to come. She'mashmo ayo she'olam haba hu mucham meis habriyo inyan v'dovel atzmo. If it would have said every Jew has a portion in the world to come, then it would say there is a world to come there, and you have a portion of that. And if you're good, then God will give you a piece. That's what it would have meant had it said ba'olam haba. The Olam Haba is the creation of your own actions. That's what it is. The energy, the force, the life force, the love, the sense of purpose that you invested in your actions. When the action is done, the energy stays. Energy doesn't disappear. So you finished an action. The action isn't an Olam Haba. But if with the action there is energy, that energy is preserved forever. And that becomes the Olam Haba. The Kach Amar, therefore, it says, "Shekol Yisrael Shleim lechol echod, every Jew, chelik hakadusha v'ha'iris v'atzachzach v'shikin v'osif lo'olam habo mimasa v'atoivim, has a portion in the sanctity and the energy and the fineness that he has set aside and developed and evolved for himself from his good deeds during his life in this world." The Chaim Volozhin adds in the note that it doesn't work quite the case with negative, the same way with negative forces. Negative forces need to be sustained. Positive forces have their own life force, and they're permanent. So if you do something positive, you create an energy, and that energy carries on forever. It never disappears. But if you do something negative, then it's a negative energy, but that negative energy needs to be sustained, and it's sustained by one's own deeds and actions until the time when one has either done tshuva or been punished for it. So whether one's punished in this world, and that word punishment is such a bad word, such a negative kind of a word. Better would be to say when one has been treated for it. So it doesn't get, you've got a disease, chas v'shalom, you have to go in for treatment. Treatment's not, might be painful, but it's not punishment. The treatment is a painful way to rectify the problem. So that's what Onish is. Onish is not punishment in that sense. Onish is rectification. It's treatment. When you've had the treatment, there's no more force sustaining the negative force, the negative energy. So negative energy ultimately wears itself out. And that's why we say that a person goes to Gehenna, he has to go through the suffering of Gehenna for 11 or 12 months, And then what? Then it's done. By that time, the negative forces have been worn through, and they no longer have a force that sustains them, so they disappear, and then you're left only with the positive forces. So there's a difference between negative force and between negative energy and positive energy. Negative energy needs to be sustained, and positive energy is self-sustaining. The chen onish ha-gehenim in yonah ken. The Chaim Moshe goes on to say, and the punishment of gehenim is the same thing. Shehachet atzmo hu onsho. It's not that there's a place of boiling oil that you get thrown into if you do something wrong. The sin is the suffering. As the Pasuk says in Mishlei Avonoisov, Yilkedunu es harosho. His sins will entrap the wicked person. Uvechevle chatoso yitomech. And he will collapse in the pain of his sin. Sin is painful. Sometimes we feel it. Sometimes we're tuned in enough to actually feel it. While we're doing it, one can sometimes feel the soul's pain. Even if the body is enjoying it, one can sometimes tune into the soul's pain. But when there isn't a body, when there's just a soul, it's extremely painful. To yasrech ro'osech, it's your evil is what punishes you, what hurts you. If a man does one of Hashem's commandments that he ought not to do, there's a negative energy immediately that is up there, that same place that has the positive energy that makes everything work. When you do something wrong, in that same place there's a negative force that starts turning everything into turmoil, starts turning everything around. And one gives force to these negative, there are negative forces in the world, and we start to say, where does evil come from? Where do negative forces come from? We create them. Just as we can create positive energy, so we can create negative energy. And we spoke last time how one has to be sensitive to it, and it's possible to be sensitive to energies of people, of situations. You can feel when there's a negative energy, and you can feel when there's a positive energy. And we ourselves create positive and negative energy. Umisham, so what happens to that now? So now I've done something wrong, a wrong thought, a wrong deed, a wrong act, done an avero. Now there's a certain electrical pattern up at the source of my soul. Exactly the same thing happens as happens on the good side. Umisham mamshich gamalatzmi ruach atumah shemelafifter be'esasiyase oven. And so now I am surrounded by that same as I was surrounded by a positive force that made everything work and aligned everything for me. Now I'm surrounded by this negative force. And afterwards, this negative force disappears. And where does it go? It goes back into the world of energies. And while you're sinning, while we're doing the Avera, we're in Gehenna. We just don't feel it. Gehenna is not a place you go to afterwards. Gehenna is the impact of negative energy, the way you feel when you're surrounded by negative energy. And while we're doing an Avera, we're in that. Just, we're not sensitive enough always to feel it. Sometimes we can feel a touch of it. Sometimes we're completely oblivious to it. Sometimes we feel it later. But afterwards, Rak she'ena margish adayin adachab tirosa. You only feel that negative force after you've lost your body, when you died. She'el nirkat az bereshis asher hechin. Then your soul is surrounded. Now your soul is an energy of its own. It doesn't have the protection of the body, so it's at the whim of all the energies that it has created. And if there are negative forces, the soul is driven crazy by all these negative forces until it's worked them through. Hein koichos atumo v'hamazikin shenivru mimasov. Those are the negative forces created by our souls. So, this is, we said that one of the earlier shiurim, the human being is a generator. We are generators of energies. We're not consumers of energy, we're generators of energy. But we can generate positive and negative energy. And negative energy is disruptive. It's disruptive to the universe, and it's disruptive to our souls. And positive energy is constructive to the universe and constructive to our souls. But we're most subject to the forces of those energies after death. While we're alive, we have some kind of ability to feel them, and the more tuned in and the more sensitive we are, the more we can sense them. But once we lose our bodies, the neshama is completely subject to those forces. There's nothing else in its life. The neshama is just a part of those forces, and the negative forces are very painful, and the positive forces are very exhilarating. And then he goes on to say, in the middle, imagine you've got a sefer in the middle paragraph of the next page, Lachin kishitofsu anshe knesis hagdoyla la yetzahara. There was a time when the anshe knesis hagdoyla, the leaders of Klal Yisrael during the early days of coming into Eretz Yisrael, were able to capture the yetzahara. So the yetzahara is the passion with which we do wrong. That's what the yetzahara is. The yetzahara tov is the passion with which we do right. And the Yetzer Hara is the passion with which we do wrong. So both of them are energies. The positive energy and negative energy. If there's no passion, if we do our veiros without any passion and we do our mitzvahs without any passion, I guess it's not, there's not much energy in the mitzvah and there's not much energy in the aveira. But still, not to suggest that therefore they were right. But there was a period of time where the Anshei Knesset HaGdoyla were able to capture the Yetzer Hara. Nichbo az gam ha-gehenim atzmo. Gehenim ceased to exist at that moment. That means Yetzer Hara in this world powers Gehenim. This place called hell, whatever it is, it's not, now we know it's not a place, it's a force, it's an energy, it's a force of energy that exists in the world. And it impacts not only after death, it's impacting even when we're alive, we're impacted by it. All the negative forces that attack us are Gehenim forces. Just we're very attuned to them after death. And when the Anshei Knesset HaGdoyla were able to temporarily neutralize the Yetzer Hara, Gehenim ceased to exist. As the Zohar says, Kegavno dechayavo mischamamam benura de Yetzer Hara, just as bad people heat themselves up, energize themselves with the force of the Yetzer Hara, negative energy, bechol chimuma vechimuma, with each act of energy, Hachi itokad nuro de Gehenim, that energizes, fuels the fires of Gehenim. That provides negative energy to Gehenim. So we build Gehenim, just as we build the Olam Habo, so we build Gehenim. Gehenim is this terrible place where it's not, again, not a place, it's just forces that we're subject to. We build them. Zimno chadalo ishtakoch yetzahara ba'alma. There was a time where temporarily there was no yetzahara in the world. For a brief period of time, there was no Yetzirah. V'chol ha'uzim no kaba nuru de Gehenim v'lo yitoket klal. During all that time, there was no energy in the Gehenim. There were no negative forces. There was nothing coming out of Gehenim. Gehenim was still. It was quiet. Ahadu Yetzirah lis la'asre. When the Yetzirah returned to its place, shoru chayove almo lis chamamove. The bad people of the world started heating themselves with the Yetzirah, energizing themselves, their negative passions. Shori nura de Gehenim liskodo. At that time, the fires of Gehenim started to burn once again. Because what fuels Gehenim is not God. What fuels Gehenim is the passion of people doing wrong. That's what provides fuel for Gehenim. If people had no passion for wrong, there would be no Gehenim. Every time one of us has a passion for something wrong, we add fuel to the fire. And that provides, that energizes the negative forces. So we provide, the human beings are providing both, are creating both sources of energy. God has given us, back to the first part of the Nefesh HaChayim, where He creates us, B'tzelem Elokim, God creates us in the image of God, meaning He gives us the capacity to generate energy, both positive and negative. And these two forces are being built all the time by our own passions. Zeh Omar HaKosuv, that's what Iyud says, Ki pol odom yeshalim loyd, is the activity of a human being that pays him. Sha'pu'ulo atzmo hatovo imro chas v'shalom, because the action, good or bad, he atzmo hatashlumin shloyd, that is the payment. It's not that you do good, God rewards you. Your good is your reward. The energy that you create, that's it. There is no reward. It's like saying you invest money in a retirement fund, and at the end of your working career, you take the money out and you say, this is my reward for working, my company rewarded me. No, the company didn't reward you at all, this is money you put away. That's all. That's what Olam Haba is. It's just the energy you've put away. Negative and positive. That's Olam Haba. And that's what it says in Pirkei Avos, Shischar mitzvah mitzvah, Shischar aveiro aveiro. What is the reward for a mitzvah? It is the mitzvah. What is the reward for an aveiro? It is the aveiro. And some of you might remember that in a session that we had at Roy Block's house one Shabbos a while back, months ago, not that many months ago, We talked about this, Shishchar mitzvah, mitzvah, shchar aveiru aveiru. And we said that if one doesn't really love doing mitzvahs, if one doesn't really enjoy the mitzvah, then what's the reward? The reward's more of what you don't really enjoy that much. So what does that mean? Shchar mitzvah, mitzvah. That means there is no reward. The reward is the mitzvah. That's it. There's no other reward. It's not that you do the mitzvah and God rewards you. The mitzvah is the reward. The only thing is the mitzvah creates a permanent source of energy which you're able to draw from later on. But we have to be able to enjoy it while we're here too. We've got to understand what it means. The mitzvah is not an obligation. It is an obligation, but that's not where it ends. That's just where it starts. But a mitzvah is one has to be able to find the pleasure and the joy from the positive energy of a mitzvah and to feel that and experience that, because that is one's olam haba. That's what one is building. Let's go a little bit further and then we'll have a few minutes of discussion. And that's what Chazal mean when they say a very difficult Chazal, which Reb Chaim Volozhiner asks a courageous question on. The Gemara says, Kol ha'omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu vatron hu yivosru chayov. A very powerful statement the Gemara says. If anybody says, God will forgive, it's okay, God understands, that person's life will be compromised. If anybody says, God is a compromiser, your life will be compromised. And often people say, God will understand. And the Gemara says, very sure, you can't say that. And the Rishonim says the same thing. Many, many places where it says that. V'lichoyro yipole, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that's a very disturbing chazal. If you say, you know what, God will understand my circumstance and He'll be lenient with me, you're not allowed to say that. Why not, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner? Just an ordinary kind person operates that way. You did something wrong, so I'll try and understand your circumstance and I forgive, and that's how we are with each other. What's a terrible thing to say? God also operates that way. Why is that so serious? But now we understand why. It's not that God sits in judgment and says, you naughty person, you did that, now for that you're going to get 10 days in Gehenna. Because then you could say, you know, God, but, you know, it was my circumstance, and we're not allowed to say that. But that's not how it works, he says. We've just said the sin is the punishment. Because at the time of the creation of the world, God programmed the universe. And the way he programmed it is, we are the cause, the universe is the effect. We do something, we are the action, the universe reacts. Positive and negative. All that we do create their own energies and impressions. Everything at its correct root and source. And therefore, it's a cause and effect. There's no rachamim in cause and effect. The punishment that comes is a natural outcome of the action. It's cause and effect. To say God will forgive is as absurd to jump off the top of the Empire State Building and say, you know what? Gravity will understand. The universe will understand. I feel like a joyride. I'm not doing this because I want to die. The universe will understand. Can't work that way. Does that mean God couldn't intervene? God could intervene. And he could have somebody walking down below carrying a mattress on their head just as you fall. Highly unlikely. Why? And why is that? It doesn't matter how much you daven before and what you do, it's not going to happen. Because we know the laws of the universe. The laws of the universe, there's gravity. You jump out, you fall, it's high, you'll kill yourself. That's how it is. And you can't say afterwards, where was God? I jumped and God didn't save me. Where was God? Where was God? God was watching. God was watching him and shaking his head and saying, idiot, idiot, idiot. And God says exactly the same when we do our averus. When we do our averus and we create negative energy, and that negative energy then causes our lives to go crazy, And later on in Olam Haba, hurts us in other ways. But even in this world, causes our life to become turbulent. We say, where's God? God's crying. What an idiot you are. He told you what you need to do in order to operate correctly. And again, what God has told us is not just do the mitzvahs. What God has told us is He's taught us how to convert spiritual input into physical output and physical input into spiritual output. He's taught us how to do that. We've got the book. We know how to do it. It's all available. If we don't want to live that way, then we're jumping out of the Empire State Building. We're going against the laws of nature. Because these laws are as natural. And the proof is, the New Age thinkers and the Eastern philosophers have researched and found them. They're there. It's not as if you have to know this because the Torah tells you. The Torah telling you means you can save thousands of years of research. But if you don't want to go that way and you want to do it by thousands of years of research, you'll find it in the research. These are laws by which the world operates. So to say Hashem is a vatron, Hashem will forgive and forgo and He'll understand, it's got nothing to do with understanding. And this is consistent with Reb Chaim Volozhin's whole approach that Elohim doesn't mean judge. The Christian approach is Elohim means judge, God is a judge, and there's justice, and you do this, God will punish you that way. That's Christianity. And we live like Christians because we live in a Christian world, and we think like Christians. That's why we have to learn this to understand this is not the way the Torah is. This is not judgment, this is cause and effect, programmed into the world at the time of the Bria and given to us, laid out to us in blueprint exactly what the cause and effect is. The creation of positive energy, negative energy, and negative energy is like the force of gravity. It pulls you down and it destroys you. Maybe it also holds you firm, it does this. Maybe there's some positive reasons for negative energy as well. But negative energy is like gravity. It's a spiritual equivalent of gravity. It pulls you down. And the only difference is who creates the negative energy? Who creates gravity? Who creates gravity? You can say Hashem. Hashem programmed, He created the idea, but who actually creates the gravity? The world. The world, isn't that right? If there wasn't a mass, there wouldn't be gravity. It's not that God created. The world creates its own gravity. We create our own gravity. We're little worlds, we're little universes. We create negative forces that pull ourselves down and pull each other down. We create it. And God's taught us in the Torah how not to do that. How to boost ourselves upwards. How to drive ourselves. How to propel ourselves. How to uplift ourselves. That's what He's taught us. It's interesting that in America on Independence Day, they a lot of firecrackers. It's a firecracker day. It's like their Guy Fawkes. Except it's quite interesting, the philosophy in there. England, Guy Fawkes is about destruction. Guy Fawkes celebrating the... I don't know why they celebrated, but anyway, the House of Commons was nearly blown up. But in some of the older writings of the Americans, they say, why fireworks on Independence Day? They talk about, and they link it, in fact, to the case in the Torah where when the people were plagued and Hashem told Moshe to make the copper snake. Remember? And when they look upwards, it wasn't just a question of looking at the copper snake, it was that they should look upwards. That there was a desire that people should be looking up on Independence Day. There should be an upward looking, they should see things and they should be looking upwards, not straight and not down. They're looking at the firecrackers, but through looking at the firecrackers, they're looking upwards and they're seeing elevation. They're seeing an upward movement. And this, the Torah teaches us, you know, even when these space shuttles go up, amazing force to think that you can defy the laws of gravity. There are laws of gravity, and physics also allows you to defy the laws of gravity. And so it is with the Torah as well. There are laws of spiritual gravity that hold us down, and the Torah teaches us the science of rocketry. How to propel yourself above that. How to overcome that. How to master negative energy and to create positive energy. That's what the Torah tells us. But if we don't choose to live that way, we can't say, but Hashem will understand. Of course Hashem will understand. He'll cry for us. But He won't intervene, because that's the way He's programmed the world. So either the only thing that we've got, that yes, if we jump out of the building, then gravity pulls us down. The only thing that we've got is al yedei koach ha-tshuva. We do have the power of tshuva. We can reverse negative energy. We can deconstruct negative energy through tshuva. And what is tshuva? Tshuva means going back. Tshuva means undoing, deconstructing, and getting back to the point of positive. And through the process of tshuva, we're in fact able to do that. We're able to get to some positive force of teshuva. unfortunately, as we've commented previously, it's inevitable that we generally only make major changes in our lives. We only make little changes of our momentum when there's been a catastrophe of some sort. Sometimes it's a big catastrophe, sometimes it's a small catastrophe. It's very, very seldom that human beings will deviate, will divert their lives onto a different path without catastrophe. And I think I did mention to you this, the study that was done recently by Fast Company in the United States of the number of people that would successfully change their lives if they were told that with 100% certainty, unless they change their pattern of living, they will die. So in other words, if you knew for sure, we didn't discuss that in the previous year, if you knew for sure that if you carry on the way you are, you're going to die quite soon, what chances are there that you'll change? 1 in 10. 9 out of 10 people don't and can't. Even at the third, the only time they change is when there is catastrophe, that's for sure. It's terrible. It's a tragedy of the human condition that we don't. It's very hard to say that, and that's why we can't say, you know, I'll do the Aver and I'll do tshuva later on. You know what? You won't. If you don't have the strength of character to resist the Avera, you certainly won't have the strength of character to divert your life, which is now set on a different course by the negative energy, later on. There's no way you'll have the capacity. You might want to, you might have in your mind, you might say, sorry Hashem, and then carry on living, but that's not tshuva. To really do tshuva is much harder than not doing the Avera. So it's highly unlikely that we're going to do tshuva unless there's a sense, unless there's catastrophe. And it's a national reality. The whole Torah is that time and time again. Everything goes well, the Jews go with negative energy. Negative energy, they start doing wrong things, they start doing bad things. God doesn't say, if you don't stop, I'm going to cause a problem, and that causes no. There has to be a tragedy. There's a magefa, there's a something, there's a plague. Over and over we see that in the Torah. We change when there's catastrophe. And very few are able to create, to simulate catastrophe. That's really what Musa is. Musa, we said this from the word Yisurin. Musa is to simulate catastrophe, so that you don't have to wait for it actually to happen, that we're able to simulate it. But very few people can do that, very few nations can do that, and very few organizations can do that. But when companies don't face catastrophe of one, catastrophe doesn't mean annihilation, catastrophe means pain. When an organization or a nation or an individual faces pain, there's enormous opportunity for a redirection. It's a celebration. I've said that before and I can't emphasize it enough. We tend to look at suffering as something terrible, and it is. Nobody wants it. But it's also the most amazing opportunity to redesign, to rethink that vision, to recheck where you're going, to realign energies. The time of Yisurin is an amazing time to do that, and that's what Teshuva really is. And that's why we're asked to feel discomfort during these 3 weeks and during these 9 days. Because there was catastrophe. But it doesn't help the catastrophe took place thousands of years ago. That doesn't give us the opportunity to realign. The purpose of the discomfort is just for us to be able to link into the pain and to feel the discomfort, or to actually feel the discomfort to some degree. Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. You know, we can go through the 3 weeks and the 9 days keeping all the laws and not feeling discomfort. Last night I enjoyed a very wonderful some pasta and cappuccino and a beautiful dessert that my hosts provided for me, and it was wonderful. So it wasn't me. So we've become quite good at keeping the laws and avoiding the pain. But the real thing is, it's not really about meat. And it's not really about buying a new suit of clothes. It's about pleasure. It's about pain. It's about, not pain, so that's about, it's about discomfort. The 9 days, the laws of the 9 days are designed just to shift us into a place of discomfort. Just so to give us an opportunity to feel the discomfort, because if you feel discomfort, there's an opportunity for change. There is nothing more damaging to the prospect of change than comfort. And look how we pursue comfort. And we're living in a generation that pursues comfort with all its might. And we've never had a more comfortable generation, and we've never had a more troubled generation, as we've said before. Because there's a correlation. The higher the comfort, the deeper the trouble. is where there's comfort, there's complacency. Where there's complacency, there's no change. And it's quite an art to be able to link into the discomforts. That's what the Gemara means when it says that even if you put your hand into your pocket to pull out a 50-cent coin and you pull out a 1-rand coin, that's yisurin, that's suffering. Now, we don't call that suffering, that's kind of normal. But if we would tune into that, if we could be tuned in, that even that is discomfort. And each discomfort is an opportunity for change. Why did I pull out the rand and not what I wanted? Why am I not, why is my life not aligned? Remember we said when things are aligned, you put in, the right coin comes up. The parking's in front of the place, the person's waiting, everything just goes. That's when there's no yisurin. But if things aren't going, if one's encountering stumbling blocks, little ones, big ones, those are discomforts and they're messages, and it's an opportunity to just do a little bit of thinking and a little bit of readjustment. And if we become sensitive to the little discomforts, God doesn't have to bring the big discomforts. The more sensitive we are to the little discomforts, and the 3 weeks is just little discomforts, nothing major, little things, but constant reminders that we're uncomfortable. Because if we're uncomfortable with the present state, and the discomfort has to be with the present state, not with the time period in the calendar. So what we find ourselves doing often is, 3 weeks, after 9 days, can't wait for Tisha B'Av to be over. So what am I getting discomforted about? The calendar. It's not about the calendar, it's about the world. I should be looking at the world and saying, really, I should be in the state of discomfort all year. It's a chesed of the Torah that I have a heter not to be discomforted the rest of the year, that Hashem limited it to these 9 days. Thank God, He gave a heter. It's not that God told us to be discomforted for 9 days. The Torah tells us, you know what? Only 9 days. It's okay. I understand. You're not going to keep it for the whole year. But we should, because of the state of the world. It's a call to us to tune in to the discomfort of the world, not to the comforts of the world. We realize the world is, we actually, our souls are not comfortable in the world. Our souls are uncomfortable in the world. And what can we do to try and align the world more with God's will so that our souls become more comfortable and thereby our bodies become more comfortable as well? So let's leave that there at the end of chapter 12. And, it's just about time for one or two questions before we understand.
When the unchecked study brother got rid of the legs of horror,
he wasn't dealing with that. Just that the forces that you're saying that all energy all energy was diminished because.
So I was really going to ask him. So how do those two fit together?
Well, it depends.
So don't we now need to understand that relationship? He said that I'm dealing with this particular negative word, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, because
the problem is you have to deal with something in some way. And what it seems to be the other one or the other.
You've got to have passion, and your passion has to be directed positively.
Yes.
That creates energy. If you live a non-passionate life, you're living a life with no energy.
No, that's the question. Is a non-passionate life a negative life?
No, it's a zero. It's a neutral.
So
allow for zero. You're going to have neutral. And don't forget, if you do a mitzvah, or you do an avera without passion, there's still some energy. It's not as if it's nothing. There's still some energy. And something is accumulating, because every action has a reaction. Everything is an energy. Nothing is without energy. But the more passion and direction and purpose there is in what we do, the more the energy. If it's directed positively, it creates positive energy. So if we're really looking to create these energies and be driven by these energies, then we have to use our passions. If we use our passions negatively, we fuel the furnace of the negative energies.
What about the negative energy sustain itself?
But as you said, it dissipates through punishment or teshuva. That's the way it burns itself out. Well, not all, but enough to be able to bring Mashiach. That's what it would be.
What are the practical steps a person can take himself out of their comfort zone?
There are a number of things a person can do. The one is, one can have a very good friend or spouse who one empowers to challenge one. And as long as that is done from a place of love, that can be incredibly constructive and very discomforting, because generally our friends tend to stay off there, and if we're doing something that they don't like, they just tend to ignore it. make allowances, and that's not good for us because it doesn't create discomfort. So the one thing is to have people around oneself that creates that. It's quite interesting that there are many cases of this, but the famous one is the CEO of Compaq Computers before it merged with HP quite a while before. Used to have two teams among the senior executives, the A team and the B team. The B team composed of people who used to tell him, watch out for a guy called Michael Dell. It was this little Jewish guy who's got a new way of selling computers and he's going to destroy us. And the A team were the people who used to say, Michael Dell, destroy Compaq. That little Jew, that's not, you don't have to worry about him. And the A team were the people he used to play golf with and the people he used to invite to his home, and he surrounded himself with the A team, and the B team were distanced. So that's a chief executive who likes to live in comfort. And the people who were saying, watch out for Michael Dell, he didn't like having around him, so he didn't play golf with them. And we'd all like that in some way or other. We can choose whether we want to surround ourselves with people who from a place of love confront us and challenge us, or we want to surround ourselves with people who think we're just wonderful. So that's the one thing that we can do. The other thing that we can do is to start becoming tuned into to little discomforts and to realize their messages. And when something isn't going right, God is saying something. You're not aligned. Something's not right. And to start becoming tuned into that and to check in with ourselves when things are going right and when things aren't going right, and to feel the feedback we're getting from the world, from other people, are some of the ways that we can do it. And then through the other, I can't get into deeply here, but through deep work on oneself, and the West's method of that is therapy, and the East's method is meditation, and so has various methods, Musa, different ways of doing that. But that's deep internal work, really confronting yourself very, very honestly. And seeing who you really are from an ego perspective, how much of what you're doing is ego driven and how much isn't, and what the telltale signs are, how you know when it's ego and when it's not, things that are where there's fear, where there's abuse, where there's worry, where there's control. Those are all signs of ego drive, and where you see that is to start becoming discomforted by that. Depends how under guidance, it depends how it's done, because it can be very harsh and very self-negating, and you don't want to negate the self. You only want to negate the ego. So learning musa in an unguided way is like going for radiotherapy without a radiologist. They might just aim the thing at the wrong part of your body, and that's not good. So musa is a very powerful form of getting rid of the cancerous cells, but sometimes it gets rid of the healthy cells, so you have to be very careful with it.
We spoke about positive energy roles. You just have a heading to show that you can understand.
Yeah, usually if you understand where it's coming from. If you can understand where it's coming, how you created that. Was there that visioning? What were the believers that made that possible?
It's just everything goes wrong, everything's great. And sometimes everything just goes wrong.
Yeah, and sometimes there are reasons beyond your control, sometimes it's in your control, but it's good to try and tune into it and start seeing, what did I do differently that day? Where was my thinking? Where was my head? Where was my sense of purpose? Where was my value system? How was I interacting with the people around me? What energy was I putting out? What was my attitude like? What did my face look like? And usually you'll find the patterns that causes. What Chaim Volozhin said 2 weeks ago, that if you look at the universe with a smiling face, the universe smiles back at you. So there's an energy that you can give out, and usually you'll find when things aren't going well, you started. Not that the world started going wrong. Usually when things aren't going well, you started. You got out of bed on the wrong side. That's usually the case. Yeah, I'm not telling them. They can do what they want, but that would be a wise thing to do. Yeah. Okay, let's leave it there. Thank you very much.